Gig Gab, episode 421 for Tuesday, March 19th. That's T for Two Tuesday, 2024. Greetings, folks, and welcome to Gig Gab, the show by, for, and about working musicians here back from South by Southwest, now in Durham, New Hampshire. I'm Dave Hamilton, and I am super stoked to bring back Mike Schulte as my guest co-host for today. Thanks, Mike, for coming back, man.
I'm here in the mid by Midwest, just hanging out, dude.
I don't think that's a thing, but I might start it.
You know, it might be a thing. There have been a lot of things that have started like that. When I lived in Austin for about 6 years, and I was stupid when I lived there because I bought into, there's this mentality of Austin residents that is basically epitomized by the name of all the events that happen for Austin residents, like gigs and stuff that happen outside of downtown, and it is South by So What. I thought, like, it is avoid downtown like the plague. Actually, I got to come up with a new phrase for that because I'm terrible at avoiding the plague, and I did avoid downtown. But like, everybody's like, oh, it's stupid. South by Southwest is dumb. Don't go. It's bad. Like, and yes, there's more people downtown and a little bit more traffic downtown. But like, whatever. You know, it's like a 6-block area. It's not like the worst thing in the world. And I didn't wind up going to South by Southwest until after I had left Austin. I was down there for we had set up an office down there for Backbeat because we had a couple of people that were there, and I was like building furniture with them and, you know, getting the office going. And then I had a pass for South by, and I had a hotel downtown. And one night I was like, well, what's happening tonight? It's like, wait, holy crap. Van Morrison is at La Zona Rosa. REM is at Stubbs. Like, I know what I'm doing tonight. I call my wife the next day. I'm like, we were idiots. We were stupid.
Well, I've said this my whole life. There's been so much online hate that I've dealt with, like, through everything I've ever done. And it's like, you come up with this phrase that, like, it's okay to like things that are popular. Like, it's totally fine to say, that's popular, and I like it. Like, but there's that mentality of, like, well, if it's popular, then it's not cool, because yes, I'm cool, because I don't like things that everyone likes. I like indie bands or whatever, you know? Like,
yep.
I've always, that's been a phrase that stuck with me forever, that it's literally fine to like fun stuff, popular stuff that everyone likes. It's totally cool.
There's a reason it's popular.
Yes.
Right? Like... That's a really good point.
If it's popular, that means it's really, probably really fun and good.
There's something about it that's good, right? Like, and certainly, I know, we can find things that are popular simply because they've been marketed to death and people have gotten used to them, and therefore they are popular. Like, you know, and there's certain, like, songs or even probably genres of music that have been made popular solely by the radio, right? Like, you know, but there's, like... Those only last a short period of time if there's not quality, some version of quality there.
We talk about it a lot on the Confused Breakfast podcast, where we dissect movies. You know, we say that even the worst movie ever made is someone's favorite movie, and that's cool. It's like we're really happy that that's your favorite movie, even though we don't like it. We're like, that's just really cool that it's your favorite movie.
And, yes,
and we need more of that in the world today. Like, people want to hate on different bands and different kind of musics and tribute bands and cover bands, and so it's like, if that's your favorite thing and you like doing it, awesome. I'm so happy that you found something that you like. But
yes,
that's not how we operate anymore.
Yes, there was I wasn't even planning on talking about this today, but it fits. I won't assume. Do you know who Diane Warren, the songwriter, is?
I do not.
Oh, okay. Well, you know her songs, right?
I'm sure.
I know that you know her songs because she has written, I think, more top tens or number ones than ever. So, like, some of her top 10 songs are Rhythm of the Night by DeBarge.
Oh, gotcha.
Look Away by Chicago. The If I Could Turn Back Time by Cher, Unbreak by Heart, Toni Braxton, I Don't Want to Miss a Thing, Aerosmith, only the second cover they ever did.
Armageddon, right? Theme
correct
song?
Yeah. So Diane Warren, there was a movie at South by Southwest about Diane Warren. And they called it Relentless. This woman was relentless. Like, no, and still is. Like, she just cranks out songs and will be like, okay, well, I know. Like, if I could turn back time is an example they used in the movie. She wrote it, and she's like, this is great for Cher. And she sent it to Cher, and Cher was like, yeah, no, it's not for me. And she just stayed on her about it and was like, no, it's for you. And
finally, I know better than you do.
She's like, I know. Right. And then she's like, I'll pay for the studio time. You go in and record this song. And Cher's like, fine, Diane. Like, she knows that the best, she knew Diane well enough, I guess, at that point. I was like, I guess, fine. If somebody's going to pay for studio time, I'll go record the song. And Cher says, you know, she's in the booth singing the song, looking at Diane through the glass, realizing how perfect this song is for Cher, right, and like hating Diane in this moment for this. You know?
That's awesome.
But yeah, and she is relentless. She, you know, like the name of the movie was good, but you know, popular stuff. She writes songs that people love, and it's okay. In fact, they estimated that her catalog was worth like, you know, $500 million or something.
Decent. Pretty good.
You know, yeah. She's happy living with her cat. She's fine. Yeah. She's good to go. She like it's I recommend the movie. I'm not selling it all
awesome,
that well
yeah.
at all, but she is really an interesting person. I don't know if she's been officially diagnosed, but there's a discussion in the movie about how she likely has, you know, some flavor of Asperger's
something. Yep.
That not only lets her be as focused as she is, but as relentless as she is, and not care what other people think of her, kind of to your point. Like, it's okay to be popular, but driven. Like,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
I'll check that out for sure.
Yeah. I don't know when it's coming out. You know, I saw the premiere of it at South By, so, you know, but it'll make it out. Like, there's no question.
Of course. Yep.
So. So what have you been up to? Did you do those flyaway gigs we talked about the last time?
We did, yeah. Like, what was it? We were in Dallas and L.A. in the span of a week, flying out to play for corporate events that have stupid amounts of money that is just such a cool experience and also a really great payday. But yeah, like we talked about, we did the Dallas show, and then that was great. And then we went to Los Angeles, and I think I mentioned this last time, about 2 weeks before we were supposed to leave, our bass player found out that there's no way he could go.
Right.
That there was just not a chance that he could get away from what he had to do at home. And so luckily we had been kind of preparing for this for the future. We had gone into the studio. We had recorded our entire set list, just individually tracked everything, played it live, and just went through it, bam, bam, bam.
Yeah.
So I had my audio guy send me the bass stems for every song that we play. And without practice, without trial, we walked into a corporate event in Long Beach, California, and played to a backing tracks. The bass guitar was on its own separate backing track that front of house mixed as if the bass player were there.
Right. Yeah.
And it was... And it was like nobody knew. It was completely fine. Everything worked out great. And we're now realizing that I think this is the future for us, because we've made it to the point where we can't afford to not play a show that we've booked, right? Like there's too much money involved for our organization, which is not just us. It's our production company. It's our techs. And there is too much on the line involved for this town festival or this wedding or this corporate event that has hired us to play. And I've seen over the last 3-4 weeks, I've seen so many bands just going, sorry, singer's sick. Oops, bass players can't make it to the show. And they're canceling the shows. And I think we've realized that that's a whole nother thing that we can essentially offer as being one of the most professional bands in our market, to say, okay, we even called the purchaser in LA. We said, hey, just to let you know,
yes,
our bass player cannot make it. And we have two options for you. One, you're going to need to buy some new plane tickets and new hotels. We'll bring a sub to come out. Or you just let us do what we do and you won't even know what's going on, and remove some per diems from what you owed us.
Of course. Yes.
And they were like, we don't give a crap. Like, go ahead, like just do what you would normally do. And they didn't know any better. Not a single person in the crowd knew any better. No one cared. And I think we're to the point where I have a child on another child on the way coming this summer.
Yeah.
And we were initially deciding that we would do the last time my wife was pregnant was I had a drummer on standby.
Yep.
That I paid him to learn my stuff, learn it, and keep these dates open. And I think what we've honestly decided is that we're just going to play, they're going to play it to drum tracks. Like, I have my parts recorded.
Yes.
And we talked to our sound guy about it. He's like, it'll be fine. It'll just look weird and people will think it's strange. But they would rather play to just my drum tracks than have a fill-in drummer kind of cloud everything up and like, ooh, is he going to play the right part? And is he sticking on the click track? So we've decided that we're pretty much all replaceable if we have illness and issue, and we're going to continue to just play the shows, and we fully prepared ourselves for that. And I think that's where we're at this point. Trial number one was completely successful, so that's where we're at, man.
Okay, so there's so much that I want to go through here, because this is fantastic. I love this. You said, there's a couple things you said that I want to like dissect here. You said the agent or the booker, whoever, the responsible party on the other end, told you do what you would normally do. And to me, that is the way to present this, that like make it their idea that is what you're going to do. But make it clear that you are very like, we've been here before, even if you haven't, folks, just, you know, as long as you're prepared, as you guys were, you know. Act like you've been here before. Hey, we have a change I wanted to tell you about. We have some options for you. We can do what we've done before, which is we'll just play our bass player's tracks or whatever the solution is that you need to throw out there. Or we can hire a sub, but that's not actually the best thing for the gig, right? Like,
or we can cancel.
Yes, option number three. But I wouldn't throw that out there. They can come up with that on their own. Right?
We didn't throw that option out there.
Right. You throw out the two options. You want to give people a choice. You want to always lead them to the answer that's best for you. And I think that there's a phrase. I've throughout my whole career, I've captured these things that I call magic phrases, right? Things that work well with customers, that communicate efficiently what you want to communicate. And there's when you said their response was do what you would normally do, I'm thinking that's what you need to say to people, is what we would normally do
is the normal way
that we would do it.
The abnormal way is to hire a bass player,
correct,
bring him out. Because none of us wanted that. We didn't.
No.
We have the guy that actually recorded us is one of the best bass players I've ever heard in my life. He's unbelievably more than capable and would fit in just fine, but it's not the same.
Now we're out of our comfort zone.
Yeah, we're all out of our comfort zone and we're not thinking. The only thing that was weird about our gig there was that Corey wasn't standing over there and that's it. Everything else was the same.
It sounded
the exact same. Yeah.
I really like this, what we would normally do, and sell it that way. And then they still get to make the choice, but they see your comfort level, even if it's not actually there. You know,
I was a little scared there.
Oh, I get that. But they see that you're comfortable. Oh, they've done this before. That makes them comfortable. The more comfortable the client is, the more comfortable you're going to be. If you get to the gig and the client's all frazzled and freaked out, no matter how normal it is for you, you're going to have some level of freak out going on, right? Like, you know, it's how it works. So, all right. So that's number one. Number two, this is something I've thought about with theater gigs, because they, for me, are the ones where I would be most likely to have a conflict. Because, you know, if I book a theater gig or something, I wind up booking theater gigs. I don't dislike doing them. I know how to read. I like the challenge of reading a show. It's nice to keep that part of my brain working. But the primary reason I take theater gigs is fear of not having gigs, right? So I can put a theater gig on the calendar and know that, all right, I'm going to be able to play this. And that was especially true during like COVID times, right? When there were no gigs. It was like, I can take theater gigs. But what'll happen is I'll take a theater gig for 6 months out thinking, I don't know if this band's going to be working as much or that band, you know, there's other things going on. So I'll take a theater gig. And then it's like, well, the time comes. It's like, turns out Dave's got lots of other options for gigs and I'm going to take them. So, and The only theater gigs I take are ones that aren't entire weekends of shows.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know, so, like some of these theater gigs that I'm offered are like, oh, it's 6 weeks of 7 shows a weekend. And it's like, Dave's not your guy. You know, like, doesn't work for me.
Dave does not bang drum.
Dave doesn't bang that drum that much. That's right. Not yeah. I got to like work and do other things. But I will take these ones that are like in rotation with another show at the theater where it'll be 2 gigs one weekend and nothing the next weekend or whatever. And so I'll take these. And sometimes the scheduling gods smile upon me and wind up having, you know, the bands that I'm in have gigs like on the off nights. And it's like, woohoo, you know, it's like dancing through a minefield, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But other times you hit the landmine. And there have been times where, like, for example, I have one gig I need to sub out for some theater show coming up in like May or whatever. And it's because I have an outdoor gig that day with Bitter Pill. Now, we all know that at the last minute, an outdoor gig can be canceled because of the rain, right? Mm-hmm. And so in those moments, I've always thought, well, wait a minute. You know, I'm the primary drummer on this show. I'm the one that everyone in the band and cast is comfortable with. But I need to have a sub at the ready, on standby, prepared for the gig.
Yeah.
And like, keeps their schedule open and is ready to go, planning to go. But if at the last minute, Dave's available, the primary drummer is available, my feeling is you pay the sub and thank them for their time and go play the gig. And like, because that's the best thing for the show.
Yep.
And your idea of having a sub that you pay on standby, this is good business.
It's what I did two summers ago. I basically paid him money ahead of time to reserve X dates and to practice and to learn the repertoire. And then if he would have had to have taken the gig, he would have gotten paid on top of that.
Okay, that's fair.
But he did not have to take the gig. And what we did learn, though, is that that maybe isn't the best. It's a great option if you don't have the ability to do what we've just done. Because back then we did not have, it was like either there's no drummer or there's a sub drummer. Like that was the only options. And and I was actually kind of surprised when the band said they would almost rather play a small town festival with backing drum tracks instead of an actual drummer. But I actually get it, because that is when you're as tight of a show as many of us are that listen, that play to click tracks and backing tracks and you know how the songs are supposed to go, it bringing a sub in is a big deal. You don't realize how much your ears cue in on the same way someone sings something or the same fill. You don't think about it that way. You just go, oh yeah, I know that we're going into the chorus now. But if I don't do the exact same drum fill that I did the last 20 shows, that might kind of throw somebody off a little bit.
It definitely can.
Shoot, where are we?
Yeah. I've always said the best thing is for every band member to know every other band member's parts.
Completely.
But it's not always the case, right?
Not with a sub.
Especially not with a sub, right? Yeah, exactly. So, those little cues that keep you on the rails during a gig,
And there's something to be said about comfort level too. It's so hard to play with the sub sometimes, because like we said, you're paying more attention to them to make sure they're doing what they need to do and you're not focusing on your stuff. So
yes.
we'll see what happens. It's kind of tough. You got to have a very trusted sound guy for any type of these things. You know, and bass guitar seemed pretty easy. I asked him, he's like, oh, you fed it to me as an audio file. I EQ'd it as I normally would a bass and everything sounded great. But with individually, like, here's the kick, here's the snare, here's the hat, that's going to get pretty interesting. So you really you can't just show up at a local club and be like, by the way, we got our drums tracked and you're going to run this through your system. Like, you got to have a trusted front of house person that knows you guys, that knows what he's doing. So we're going to maybe try it at a sound check someday. Just be like,
because
I want to stand in the crowd and I want to hear what this actually sounds like. And so might just run one song, because that's a lot of work. Also, I should mention, the work of taking stems and putting them into place in a song in an Ableton session.
Yes.
Just doing the bass stems took me probably 2-3 hours to line everything up, make sure they're where they need to be, make sure they're set up from the right outputs.
Right.
So
right.
I can't imagine what the drums will take, but we don't want to do the whole thing. We're going to do one song and see if this is an actual option.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah. A little litmus test. That's good. Yeah.
Then we'll start throwing in, I think then we might start throwing in some vocal, like certain parts of vocal songs to reinforce. I mean, we've got them all now. So I think the sky's the limit, and we've kind of gotten to the point of our career where we just are embracing any sort of ease of technology that we can. We're getting older. It's harder sometimes to play 3 shows in a row at that high of a level. So if we can have these little enhancements that, by the way, all the pros use, if we could just kind of have those enhancements for us, it's the thing we always say. Audiences don't know. They don't know. They don't care.
No.
As long as it sounds really good, they're going to be very happy.
So, you know, there's in the... like, you know, the devolving Facebook communities of musicians, especially if people play in cover bands or whatever, there's this idea that using tracks is cheating or not, like, all, like, it's bad, right? I'm not saying it's universally seen that way, but there's a cohort of people that think that this is like not you're not really musicians if you're using tracks or playing the tracks or whatever. I was at South by Southwest last week, as I might have mentioned. I went and saw original bands. Like, to my knowledge, there are no cover bands that play at South by Southwest. But that means some bands will play a cover song in their set, but it's an original band playing a cover song, right? You know, it's like there's no question that these are original bands, you know, looking to further their careers and all that stuff. And I was shocked at how many bands I saw using tracks for their own songs. Now, this isn't a band going and setting up and playing a 3-hour gig where they have, you know, an hour to set up and a 45 minute sound check and all of that stuff. These showcases are 40 minutes of playing, usually about 38 minutes of playing and 20 minutes of complete changeover to the next band. Yep. Every band starts on the hour. And you are not, I guess you could bring your own engineer with you, but you are using house PA.
Right.
You might even be using house drums and and house like amps and stuff, right? Because, you know, a 20 minute changeover between two bands, especially when the engineer has never worked with either of these bands. And chances are these bands have never worked with each other. So it's, you know, you can't really plan ahead. Right. But
yeah.
Even so, there's that going on. Even with that, all of that, and definitely using house engineers for most of these bands, there were like it probably wasn't half the bands that I wound up seeing, but it was a good 25% of the bands that I saw played with tracks, which meant they were using clicks, obviously, and needed to have their ears set up the right way in order for that to even come close to working. And it all worked perfectly, by the way. This band, Kevin, KVN is how they spell their name. It is 3 women, that play like they're playing
synth wave, pop
kind of stuff, indie pop, girl power kind of thing. You know, I mean, it doesn't sound like the '80s, it's like that vibe ish and their songs are great. They are fantastic performers. They are goofy AF, and I loved it. And one of them sang. All 3 of them sang. One of them sang and played like some triggers from a small keyboard. Yep. The other one played bass or guitar, and then the other one played guitar. I believe I'm remembering this correctly. So they tracked their drums for every single song, and I had seen bands in this same venue before and after them, but also on different nights that all had drums. The volume levels were, you know, it sounded fine. It didn't sound weird that there was no, and this was a small club. It didn't sound weird that there wasn't someone hitting a snare drum right there. I could see the snare drum because that was a house kit, you know, it's right behind them, but nobody's using it, you know, and they sounded great. There was, there was one band, this band called Cuffed Up. They had no bass, and yet there was plenty of bass happening, and they had built their tracks really well. The like, if there was an end of a song that like retarded or whatever, or they had like a big ending, they would just have the bass like intelligently drop out.
Yep.
Like they oh,
yeah.
carved the tracks perfectly.
I was messing around with that. I was like, oh right? no, like wait, hold on, how do we end this song if this is the kind of the retard part?
Yep.
And so I just sort of went, I just sort of pulled it out of the mix.
Yep. And then there were three bands, but I'm gonna talk about the third one separately because we're drummers and we need to know about this guy. This band Michigander, have you ever heard of
yeah.
them?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
He's been big on like Instagram reels yeah. and stuff like that. You see him a lot on there.
Fantastic. They were the full band. It wasn't just yep. Jason or whatever. That band, if you get the chance to go see them, I saw them accidentally. They were opening for somebody I was going to see. They were opening for David Shaw, who was the singer from the Revivalists. Oh my gosh.
Okay.
If you ever get to see David Shaw, or if the Revivalists play again, dude, yes. Like the Revivalists was the right name for his band, I presume. He probably had 10 people on stage. It was like going to church, man. This
wow.
was friggin' amazing. But
awesome.
I don't think they used any tracks. There were so many musicians on stage. I don't know if I
yep.
would have noticed if they did. But
yep.
Michigander used tracks for the keys. This band called Winona Fighter, which I love this name. And, they are a four-piece, female-fronted, like, power punk band, right?
Yep,
and
yep.
super energetic. They used I saw them twice. I don't think they used tracks the second time. Or if they did, they were buried low. The first time I saw them, the tracks were so loud, it was, like, almost problematic. But they used tracks for the keys as well. And this is, like, power punk. This isn't electronic music. Like, the second time when I saw them, and I was halfway through the set before I was like, wait a minute. I heard keys the last time I saw this band. I don't think that's happening right now. Or maybe they think it's happening and the engineer doesn't, you know, like, I don't know. But it wasn't missing anything without the keys, but still, like, this power punk and they're still using keys.
But I try to think about it from a fan perspective too, because I am a fan. I yep. love music. That's the thing that people kind of confuse about cover bands, you know, like, oh, cover bands, you don't appreciate original music. No, and like my favorite bands in the world, I'm so glad that they put out music, and I love discovering new music every, yes. like, that's what I listen to. Cover band is just a way to play music, you know,
yes.
but when I go see a band, if I'm going to see my favorite band in the world, I want them to play to click tracks. I want them to have backing tracks. Because I want the experience that I get from the album. I don't want them to be 10 BPM faster and like barely being able to play the song because they're not playing to click tracks. And I want I'm kind of embarrassed about it, but there are certain bands that are very, again, it's okay to like popular things where maybe yeah. you just don't jump on the train because you're like, yeah. 21 Pilots has quickly become one of my favorite bands in the entire world.
Okay.
And I slept on them for so long because whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're just a two-piece. It's a drummer and a singer that kind of goes between keys and bass, but everything else is tracked. And I've been watching all these live shows and like, that's what I want. I don't want you to have a backing band. Just do what you do and what I want to hear from you. So as a fan perspective, we should all embrace technology and clicks and backing tracks. As a band perspective, think about you bring your 7-piece band and your drummer's got a 10-piece kit
yep.
and you have a 20-minute changeover, how bad you are going to sound. You are going to sound so shitty because you're all trying to get wedges.
Yes.
Nobody can hear themselves and it's sound checks taking forever, where if you just show up with your own in-ear system and a splitter snake,
yep.
you now already, but I can roll into any gig with zero sound check and know that at least my mix is going to be in the ballpark because it was what it was from the last gig.
Yes.
It's what it was from the last show. We'll be fine. I can hear what I need to hear. So I just think that the technology argument from the mostly older men and women that
yeah,
play
yeah.
in cover bands is just so outdated because
yeah.
it's making your life easier and it's making the show better. And
you mentioned older people and it dawned on me that all of these bands, again, original bands, you know, not needing technology to cover a part that was on someone else's record, needing technology to cover a part that was on their record, but
yep.
they're all, these were younger bands. Like, you know, South by, it's not unique to find someone who's in their, you know, 40s or 50s or 60s playing at South By, but it's uncommon, right? The most
new up-and-coming
bands. It's new up-and-coming bands that are in their 20s, maybe their 30s, right? Like, that's the median sits probably at 27 years old, right? Yep. And these are all people that have grown up with technology, that, like, using tech is not seen as an add-on. It's just part of the deal. Like, they got to grow up with in-ears. They got to grow up with digital audio workstations in your house. Like, I didn't get that, you know, like, nope. I didn't even get an analog workstation in my house. If I was lucky, I had that Tascam 4-track that I could borrow from my friend.
Oh, yeah, I had that for
sure. Yeah, right. But that was it. Like, and you got, and even that allowed us to be creative and do interesting things, right? So, I there's something I want to get into about seeing a band and sleeping on a band and then finding them, which happened to me last week. But I mentioned, I referenced a third drummer that I saw using tracks. Dude, everyone go check out videos from a guy named Richard Spavin.
Okay.
He's from the UK. He kind of plays, he's like hip hop, drum and bass kind of thing. His technique is, he's a machine. Like, there's something different about this guy. He plays like all those things that you would program into a drum machine to play. He plays them live, right? With metric modulations, where he's moving between different times. He's doing, he'll play, measures divided into five with his kick drum and measures divided into three with his snare, like, simultaneously. Like, I'm watching this and doing the math in my head, trying to understand what he's playing. But also at the same time, there's a groove happening, and it's like a serious groove. Like, you could not pay attention to that part. And I wasn't at first. I was just like moving and grooving. I saw him accidentally, like, you know, the serendipity of South by Southwest is the best part of it. You just go to certain places and then there's a band and it's like, who's this? I don't know. It doesn't matter. I'll watch him play. Yep. And then, so he's doing all this crazy stuff, but it sounds so good. And he's got a guitar player and a bass player with him. And then occasionally, like, for half of his songs, this singer came on stage and would do like these raps and stuff. That was everybody was fantastic. And then I realized, I'm like, oh my God, there are keys playing. This guy's playing all this stuff to a click.
Yep.
Like, what the? Thankfully, it was an inspiring moment for me, because it was either going to be that or time to come home and turn my drums into coffee tables.
Yep.
Like, but so go check out Richard Spavin. I had to share this. But you mentioned, you know, you want to go see a band and have them sound like the album.
Completely.
And some bands, I will agree with you on that. At first, I was thinking, well, you know, like, Rush is one of my favorite bands. They went out of their way to figure out how to do all their triggering and everything so that they could replicate the album live. And they did it without a click. There was one song they played with a click because it had Amy Mann's backing vocals. And so they would play that to a click. But otherwise, that was their thing. They wanted it to be natural in the moment. They wanted to keep their own time. And they wanted the challenge of doing it correctly.
Yeah.
But I get, like, playing to a click is fine. I saw the Black Keys last week. And there's a movie coming out. A documentary on the Black Keys that
cool.
Yep. I know you're a movie guy. So, and the doc was fantastic. The doc I saw first before I saw the band. I actually wound up seeing the band twice, and I've covered some Black Keys songs in bands I've been in. I'm aware of the Black Keys. I would never, ever choose to listen to a Black Keys record. And I realized after this week, it's because of the way they record. You know, they go for that lo-fi sound on their recordings. Yep. They want everything to have like some distortion on it, even the vocals, and everything's just like super squashed, right? It's that compression distortion that just squashes everything. And it's, you know, a touch overdriven intentionally.
Yep.
And that does not appeal to my ears. I'm a sonic purist. And I get that they're doing that intentionally, and they are far better at this game than me. It just doesn't appeal to me. I had no idea that Dan Auerbach's voice was so spectacular.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he sings like Bono. I mean, the music's not like U2, but he's got a voice like Bono.
Oh, yeah.
He's such a great singer. And the way they play together is amazing. And he's a fantastic guitar player. And seeing this band live, I was like, oh my gosh, I've slept on these guys for way too long. And then on the way home from the airport, I played, you know, I told, you know, Siri or whatever, play, you know, Black Keys Essentials or whatever. And as I was listening, I was like, right, this is why I don't listen to this band.
Yeah, because you're like, yeah, it's just not my choice for audio.
For audio. But the songs are great. The music's great. So, like, there have been bands where I haven't cared. This is not unique for me. You know, I don't care for the way they produce it. But then they go play live, and it is completely different than their records. And that can either be good or bad, depending on your perspective, obviously. But
I like what I like, so I want to hear what I like play the way I like it. And maybe that's just me getting older, but that's how I've grown into it. And that's how we look at it for any decisions we make in the band. It's like, what do you think the audience wants? You know, because that's what we're here for, ultimately.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, they said... There was a quote from the movie. I'm going to pull. Actually, it wasn't. Maybe it was in the movie. Might have been in the Q&A because the Black Keys were there. It was the world premiere of the movie. Someone said, the first rule when you have a band is don't break up the band. That's the only rule.
I mean, that makes
valuable
sense, right?
Rule. Yes.
They were just on. That explains probably why they were just on Joe Rogan.
In Austin, right?
Yeah, and I think he even posted, I think he was at one of those shows. Posted a video of it or whatever. But I'm excited to listen to that episode and check that movie out. Because, give me anything behind the scenes. I don't care if it's music, if it's sports. I've been watching the Drive to Survive Formula One thing on Netflix. I could care less about racing. I don't care about it.
Sure.
This is one of the greatest behind the scenes things I've ever watched, you know, just cause like I want to know the personal side of stuff instead of what we see up front and anything music and sports, just feed it to me. I'll watch it.
Yeah. 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 Yep. The movie is called, I'm pretty sure it's called, This is a Film About the Black Keys, because why wouldn't it be, right?
You know, awesome.
But I talked to people who saw it, and the reviews were either hot or cold.
Okay.
People who were not musicians or not like into learning about the inner workings of a band, thought it was boring.
Yeah, I can see that.
Which totally made sense because really what this movie is about is how these two guys have successfully not broken up for 20 years. I mean, you know, there's that phrase, right? 20 overnight success takes about 20 years. And that's about what it took for these guys, you know. And so it was fascinating, you know, how they kept things together. They are an unlikely pair of humans. And they address that in the movie. I don't know if they're friends or not. Like, even after watching the movie, they were opening for Sleater-Kinney and weren't, you know, they were making nothing, right? You know, but they were aware of like the total take of the house or whatever. And there was one show where, you know, the headliner made $50,000, right? You know, grossed $50,000. I mean, there's expenses and all that stuff. But Pat, the drummer, said that he turned to Danny. He's like, listen, if we ever play a gig and we make $50,000, he's like, I don't care if we hate each other. We are never breaking up this band.
Yep.
And it's like, that's really interesting to be that self-aware. Like, because he's been in bands that have broken up, like we all have, you know, but
they're all out there. I mean, there's so many bands like the Stones, none of the Stones can stand each other. I mean, after 50, 60 years of playing, but you just... That's where egos like have to come into play and just be like, dude, I don't like you. So we'll just figure out how we can still do this, but we don't have to interact with each other. Cause why would we stop doing this?
Because it would be crazy to stop doing this. Yeah. Yeah.
Those are the conversations we have. Like, we thought this band, this is our 16th year of the Pork Tornadoes. And like we've been saying since year one, like, any minute now people are going to just get sick of us playing Taylor Swift songs and it hasn't happened yet. And like, the longer this has gone on, the more we've realized what we have and how special it is. And that's why we have these meetings and these conversations to make sure that nothing drives into us that we can't fix, like animosities or anything. Like, and we all know how to take criticism. We all can be very harsh of each other, but that's the only way we get to keep doing this magical thing that none of us could have ever dreamed about as kids, to be like, wow, we still get to do that. We might do this forever. Like, I don't know. Like, let's try to do it forever.
But you're all on the same page about that. Like, that's, that is the key right there, is being aware individually, but even more importantly, collectively as a band, that like, we don't want to F this up.
Yeah.
Just how it is. Yeah.
That's how it is. I don't want to stop doing this. Now that we all have kids, we want to just like hand the keys over to them in like 15 years. Be like, look, here's all your gear. Here's your fan base. Go play.
Enjoy.
And we're just going to watch now.
That's right.
We're done playing. Like, yeah, that'd be amazing.
That would be amazing. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, Dave, you'll be mine. I don't know if you've, I mean, cause you have, how many kids do you have?
Two.
And they're grown, right?
They're 24 and 22. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I have a 1.5 year old daughter.
Right.
and I'm just seeing things happen. She has this love of music already because we play music every night. She gets to pick out a record every night and she just goes over and just goes, play this. But like the other day, we're sitting in my living room and I'm playing a song that has a very distinct music's playing, but it's a kick snare. Snare while things are going on. And she started air drumming and going kick, snare.
Oh, kick, yeah.
Snare. I mean, like perfectly on beat. And then we were, you know, we're very Irish. You can tell from my red beard. We were out on St. Patrick's Day and a guy was playing some Irish tunes and she was clapping like on the beat perfectly as a 1.5 year old. And I'm sitting here just going like, oh my God, I want you to want this so bad, but I'm not going to push this. Like, I'm just going to let you decide this on your own. But man, if you want this life, I have you covered, kid. I got everything for you.
Yeah. You are approaching it a good way. I don't want to say the right way because that makes it sound like there's only one way. But, you know, my daughter wanted to play, you know, I've played, obviously she's been aware of me playing since she was born, right? And she would come to gigs and like all that stuff. Both kids would, but my daughter really was the one who was really into music. But they're both musicians, like, but my daughter really loves music in a different way than my son, like in a more active way, let's say. And she was a dancer for a long time and then hurt her knee, and that kind of ended that, but it was sort of ending anyway. But she said, I want to learn how to play guitar. And I didn't know how to play guitar. And so I was like, oh yeah, same. She's like, so we collectively decided to take lessons together.
Cool.
Well, okay. we did. I booked one lesson a week with this one teacher and we would flip flop whose lesson it was. Right. But we would both be in the room for each other's lessons, which we thought was cool. The teacher was on board with it, you know, all good. Well, it was her first instrument. It was not my first instrument. So I knew what it was going to be like in a general sense, playing an instrument. And she did not. She had to get over that hump. So she hit, and she is a perfectionist. I have no idea where she gets this from. And does not like not knowing how to be an expert at something, right? Like, and again, I resemble this. And so she got frustrated pretty quickly, especially seeing me just sort of plowing through and being like, I don't know how to do this either, but I know that the way to get there is to just do it wrong and just fumble through. And yep. I already knew how to keep time with an instrument.
Of course.
Like, there's a lot that you learn with your first instrument that carries over to the next one, even if it's in a different family or whatever. Like, I knew
100%.
And I'd been on stage with guitar players for decades. Like, I knew how to move my body in the way that a guitar player moves their body. Right. Like, there are things to this, the experiential osmosis based learning. Right. And so it turned into a nightmare. Like, you know, we would practice at home at first, but that only lasted like a month or maybe two. And then she was like, no, I'm not into it. It'd be like huge battles. And it was like, crap, I ruined this for her, you know? And then a few years later, she started playing drums in the middle school band. Yeah. And I'm like, she tells us at dinner, like, casually, like, oh, yeah, I'm playing
drums. Already been doing it.
Yes. And I'm like, what? I'm like, okay. And I'm like, oh, I get this. All right. Like, I see. I gotta play this softly. I'm like, okay, cool. Well, obviously, if there's ever anything that you have any questions about or whatever, I'm happy to help you, but you got to let me know. And I acknowledged, like, the guitar thing was sort of a disaster, and I don't want to, you know, I don't want to get involved in this in a way that you don't want me involved. And she's like, yeah, no, I'm good on my own. Okay, great. Frustrating for me, but, you know. And then, and that went on for like a year. She was playing like, you know, snare drum or whatever. We'd go to the concerts or whatever. Yeah. But that was it. Like, there was no discussion at home or anything. And then she was like, okay, look, here's the thing. I want to try out for jazz band in the fall. This was like, you know, March, April, May or something. And tryouts would be in September or whatever. And she's like, so I need to learn how to play the drum set.
Well, well, well.
And I was, yeah, exactly. And I was like, okay, that's fine. She's like, so I want you to teach me. And I'm like, I can do that. Like, here, we're going to make a deal, though. When we're at home, you're the daughter, I'm the father. Like, mm-hmm. that's how things are. When we go over to the studio, my studio is a separate building on the property. It's where my office is. It's where I am now recording the show. In fact, my drums are like, you know, 2 feet from me or whatever. I'm like, when we're here in the studio, it is student and teacher.
Yeah.
And anything goes. We can yell at each other over there. And it's okay. We leave it there and then we come home and it's all good. And she's like, okay, can you agree to that? She asked me, you know, she's like,
I'm fine with that. How about you?
How about you? And I'm like, yep, I'm in. And she's like, okay. And so, you know, we start again and she's like, oh, I can't do this. I can't do this. And she was still is a big Oasis fan. And so, it was like, pick a song that you want to learn and we'll get you there. So she's like, okay, how about like Supersonic? Cause it's a distinctive drum groove, but fairly simple. And I'm like, try to play it. Like, I'm not going to tell you anything. You just try to play. I want to see where you are. So I know where we got to go. And she couldn't do it. She had trouble with the coordination and the syncopation and stuff. And so I was like, okay, great. Let's break this down. And so it's like, you know, playing the kick just on like 1 and 3. Snare on 2 and 4. Okay, great. Now do it together. Kick with the snare. Great. Okay, fine. Let's do the hi-hat. Okay, got the hi-hat going on eighths. And then, you know, she's like, okay, great. I'm like, all right, stop everything. Now you got like just this straight boom, bah, boom, bah. You know, I'm like, okay, now forget about everything except the kick drum. Do this thing with the kick drum. And I showed her how the, you know, the doom, cha, doom, doom, doom. I'm just like, do that. She's like, okay, yeah, I can do that. I'm like, okay, great. Now let's go back to the straight 4 thing. And while she's playing it, I say to her, all right, now next time around, do the set. She's like, I can't. I'm like, yeah, just try it, whatever. And she's like, dang it, you tricked me. You got me. You taught me how to play that without actually me having to learn how to play it. And I'm like, yep. And she was pissed. And I'm like, but you're playing the song. Like,
isn't this what you wanted?
Isn't this? And then she was like, dang it. Yeah, that's what I wanted. Okay, fine. But, you know, we had to negotiate a path into being teacher student as opposed to, you know, parent child.
Yeah.
And for us, that worked really well. I've talked to other parents who have been down this path in a similar way. And my daughter and I have a different relationship because I can point back to that as the moment that sort of expanded our relationship. Yeah. It didn't change it for the worse. It just, you know, it didn't change the fact that we were still, you know, father child, but it added this other element to it. And then I became her sound engineer for the jazz band.
Nice.
And there was one time where she was setting up for a gig, and this jazz band in her middle school was 110 kids.
Wow.
This band director was amazing, the way he would get these kids to play. And so, you know, we would talk at the dinner table about how she needed to, like, you got to drive this band. There's 110 people. And like, so you can't be timid about this. You have to be confident when you go play. Because I'd watch the other kids, and these are middle schoolers, you know, seventh grade. And they would, you know, tap on the drums or whatever. It's like, that's not going to work, man. You know, even though we're putting a mic in the kick and maybe an overhead, like, these gigs come together fast. It doesn't matter that, you know, because there's like 8 trumpets and You know, there's a guitar player and a bass player and all these other things. More of a studio orchestra than a jazz band. And so I'm like front of house-ish, trying to get her, you know, like balanced in, and we're just communicating, you know, verbally, but she like with sign language-ish. But, she can see my mouth. And so I'm telling her, you know, the signal for hit the snare, I'm like hitting my arm and she's hitting it. And I'm like, more, more, more. And then I mouthed the phrase, hit that fucking thing. And her eyes, like she was not used to me swearing. And her eyes opened super wide. And I just kind of stared her down and she hit it. And I'm like, there you go.
There you go.
Yep. That's what you need.
No, that's super great advice, because I got a little fiery redhead, curly haired redhead Irish girl that I think that you're giving me a glimpse into my future. But that's super interesting. Like, I never was taught, I didn't take lessons, so I was never taught to drive the bus, right? Like, yes. I was always, I developed the, I'm following the bus. Like, that is how I developed my style of playing. And myself and the bass player, Corey, in the Pork Tornadoes, we came to blows quite a bit over the last decade of him wanting me to drive and me being like, I am driving, you know, like I am playing. He's like, you're off the click. I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm right on the click. But he wanted me to be in front of it.
Driving,
you know,
the bus.
Like, drive the bus. And I was like, but I'm hitting it right on the click. What are you talking about? And so that's a whole, like, you can learn how to play your instrument, but then there are the intangibles later on in life of a musician that you have to learn.
Yes.
You know, like the next level of stuff, the secret things of like where you need to be at volume and dynamics and where you need to be in the song and who's in charge. And though that was something, I mean, I'm 30 years into drumming now that I'm finally learning these things, you know, like,
oh no,
to where now he'll look back at me and be like, yeah,
there,
like,
you go, you, buddy,
you got it. And I'm like, I finally understand what you mean now.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. No, the most valuable thing I think for my daughter when I was teaching her this was not the time that we spent in the studio with her at the drums. There were no drums around. It was at the dinner table dissecting either her gigs or my gigs. And I learned a ton from this too. Just like, you know, we'd be like, pass the peas. Oh yeah. You know, did you notice that thing where, like, you know, the band started to fall off the groove and you like started to really nail it and pull them all back in. I'm like, you need to do that more, right? You know, and like just those little 30-second snippets of just wisdom, I'll call it, right? But like just sharing it back and forth and, you know, questions of like, yeah, what do you do when you can't hear the lead instrument or the vocalist or whatever? And it's like, oh, you know, you watch their feet because you know when they're about to start singing by the fact that they're going to approach the microphone or if they're back off. And that's how you know to like lay back. She's like, oh, I never thought to watch their feet. And like, well, I mean, yeah, I don't know how I learned that, probably the hard way, but you know, like, I don't think anybody ever told me, but that's what I do. That's how I know if we're going back into a verse or if we're staying in the solo section. It's like, watch the vocalist. Are they near a microphone? Good chance. We're about to, you know, tighten it up for a verse here.
Are they about to turn off like a distortion pedal?
Exactly.
Or turn it on or something.
Or turn
like
it
that.
On.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I had this one guitar player I played with for years. He was so bad, he would forget to turn on his boost pedal.
So it was always halfway through the solo?
Well, or never. But and like that drove me crazy from a sound perspective, but I also noticed it drove me crazy from a cueing perspective.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because it was like, dude, I don't know when you're going or stopping. Like, I need these visual cues from you. Yeah. And plus, you need to do this for the sound. Like, it's not for me. But if you do it for me, it'll help the sound. So, you know, yeah.
I love being in bands. It's the best.
Same. Same. I love talking about being in bands.
I have said that, like, if we ever did quit and we broke up, that's probably it for me.
Yeah.
That I don't think I'd ever start another band, like, because I've just... it's so much work that you don't realize that you're doing to get to the certain points. But I think I would like join or fill in or something. I don't think I could quit playing forever because of just what it does to us. But I don't know if I could start another band.
Yeah.
I don't think I could be
doing what we're doing now from scratch. No thanks. I don't have the time for it.
I get that. Yeah. That totally makes sense. Yes.
But that's me saying that in a band that's not going to break up. But if all of a sudden I'm 6 months out of out of it, well, maybe we should start a new band.
Hey, you want to start a band? Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. No, it's an addiction for sure. And it's a wonder. It's one of the healthiest ones I've found. So there you go.
Uh-huh. Yep. You ever read that book? It's called This Is Your Brain on Music.
Oh, no.
You might double check that title. It's a very dry book. It's written by some scientist guy, and it's very analytical. But
this is fascinating. As soon as you said that, it reminded me that I was like, I got to get my friend Dr. Dan on the show.
Yeah.
And it is written by my friend Dr. Dan Levitin.
Wait, what?
Yep.
Dude, that book. The thing I took from that book the most is it does validate what we know and what we've all thought happens to us when we're hearing music and playing music. But the big thing I remember that is they did like whatever you can see, brain waves, some sort of scan, and they would have people do tasks when that happens. And let's say they're reading a book, this part of the brain fires. Let's say they're having a conversation, this part of the brain fires. Let's say they're watching a TV show. Well, then this part of the brain fires. But when you're listening to or playing music, your entire brain is firing because all these different, you're remembering, you're predicting, you're getting put into a memory of the first time you heard this song. You're actually physically doing it. It's like, it's insane. All the things that are actually happening in your brain when you're listening or playing music, that's insane. You definitely need to have that guy on the show.
I definitely need to have him on the show. No, when Paul told me that he was, he needed to stop doing the show as regularly and all that stuff, I started making a list of people, right? Obviously, you were on that list. We know a lot of the people who are on that list. I put Dan on that list. I've known Dan for a long time. He is a fascinating guy. He's obviously a neuroscientist. And he's a musician.
I don't mean like he's not a good conversation. Like he's just smarter than I am. So a lot of the big words he used, I had to stop and think about.
Yeah, no, he's a great guy. He's also, he plays with one of his best friends is Victor Wooten. He tours with Victor sometimes.
Jesus.
It just the two of them will play gigs together. He's friends with like Joni Mitchell.
That's awesome.
Yeah. No, he's an interesting cat, and I don't know why I haven't reached out to him yet to be on the show. But you've reminded me, so I'm going to do it as soon as we finish here. Because
did I get the name right? This Your Brain on Music?
This Is Your Brain on Music.
This is your brain. Okay, cool.
Yeah. I've got a link to the book in the show notes, folks, at giggabpodcast.com. So you can go, I think it's Kindle or any version you want. Audiobook. I don't know who reads it. I don't know if Dan reads it or not. I met him because of Sonos. And my first encounter with him was just a dinner. And we wound up sitting across from each other. And then dinner ended. And then, like after dinner cocktails ended and finally the restaurant was about to close. Everybody else had left the table except for like me, Dan, and like the PR rep that was like we'll call him my handler with Sonos. Because Dan did some stuff for Sonos years ago. So it was just like this timing thing. It was like, she was like, you guys can keep talking, but we have to leave now. I'm like, okay, fine. Yeah, it's fine. Yeah.
Talking about music.
Yeah, that was it. She's like, I had a feeling you two would really hit it off. I'm like, yeah. So I got to reach out to Dan. Yep. All right. Well, maybe it's time to reach out to Dan. Thank you for thank you for doing this today, man. We have
always
more
a pleasure
things
to be here.
We have more things.
We keep diverting off the schedule, and oh well, we'll get to it next time.
Absolutely. Thank you for doing this. Tell people where they can find your other podcast, because this is a great show, folks.
Yeah. It's called The Confused Breakfast, and it is a funny story. I was just out in LA, and I was a guest on the Lawrence Brothers podcast. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah.
Joey, Matthew, and Andy Lawrence, they're actually musicians as well. Mm. And it ended, we had such a good time that it ended with them saying, hey, will you play drums on our upcoming single? And so I was like, yep. So I already sent them like a rough cut from my electric kit, and they were like, yeah, this is perfect. So I'm going to head to the studio and cut that. But yeah, it's called The Confused Breakfast. We talk about about 80s, 90s, 2000s movies. Pulp Fiction drops tomorrow. That might be one of our biggest, most intricate episodes that we've done. I think you guys will love it. And obviously the Pork Tornadoes, in a couple weeks, we have a new video audio series coming out called Whiskey Wednesday, where we've got some brand new covers that we did live inside of a whiskey barrel room that I think you guys are going to like. So
awesome.
Check that out. Yeah.
That's awesome. Thanks for doing this again, yep. Mike. This is I love it when we get to chit chat, and I'm glad we were able to make the schedule work today. Folks, Thanks for hanging out. Feedback at giggabpodcast.com. Send in your ideas, send in your thoughts. Send me anything you want. And if you want to get in touch with Mike, you can find him in any of those things, or send an email in and I'll send it to you. And, that's how it goes. What are those words, Mike? I think you know them.
Always be performing.
That's it. Later.